Namgya Corner, the podcast inspiring entrepreneurs in South Africa. Because if it's going to be, it's up to me.
And I got 3,000 rands for that job, and my only employee's salary was 3,000 rands. You come add value to my work, and I will repay that value. Self-doubt is the most dangerous of them all.
I do want to firstly appreciate you for making the time today. For you, why entrepreneurship? You know, when did it start for you? Why was this journey the one you took?
So I don't want to be 55 and get a watch. Cheers. Thanks for coming. And I also didn't want to, I felt I could do more. I could contribute more. And I was deeply inspired to build something that was truly innovative. But not on just a local scale, on a global scale. So I left work. And I had some money saved up because I was going to buy a house. And I used that money to start my business. Very quickly went through all of that money. And the first month, I had one employee. And that employee's salary was 3,000 rands. And know that I was running... I was planning to run a world-class cyber defense firm. And my first job was installing pizza printers at a pizza parlor. And I got 3,000 rands for that job. And my only employee's salary was 3,000 rands. And that was month number one. And I'd love to tell you the story goes like this. And, you know, month number two, and there was like this massive spike or there was this big turnaround. But there wasn't. There wasn't. It was this slow, gradual build from there.
You said, you know, you came to a point where you realized this doesn't really resonate with who you want to be when, you know, when you're 50 with a watch. There was something calling you or some reason made you spend that money and change your, you know, spend money that you're about to buy a house. You change your lifestyle. And often that's not a decision of closer to comfort. And it's not an automatic decision. What for you, you know, made you take that decision and made you feel so strong to go against the grain per se?
So nothing good ever happens in a comfort zone, but I was in a comfort zone. There was no two ways about it. And I could see myself sitting there till 55 and getting the watch because I genuinely enjoyed it. So it wasn't like I hated my job or I got fired and I was forced to do this. I really left a high-paying job, a life I loved, and people I really enjoyed and I was extremely close to go out and do this thing on my own. I felt to a large degree I was given a unique opportunity. And I say that in the most humblest way. It's not coming from a point of arrogance that I had a unique talent, but rather I was given a unique opportunity and I was given unique gifts in the fact that I could actually break away and do this. And so many people before me had invested so much in, whether you want to, you know, you want to talk about my teachers or whether you want to talk about when I went to work and I worked for the likes of, I got to work for some seriously innovative people who have companies like mine today. You know, which operate also on a global scale. You know, so I was lucky. I got to work with the likes of people like Harun Mir, who owns Things, Rulof Temming, who owns Paterva now. And my first job was at SensePost. They just recently got bought by Orange, but they're one of the leading pen testing, you know, sort of ethical hacking firms in the country, in the world, sorry, that come from this country.
Yeah.
So all those people had invested so much in me. I didn't want the story to end there. I felt like I owed it to you know, there was a personal responsibility to do something greater.
But also you believed in yourself. And in your journey as well, when you were working with the different companies and progressing, is that something that you've always had, like, you know, belief in yourself and taking that step further and growing. Where do you think that comes from, like the self-belief for you?
So I think another really interesting question, and I've never been asked this, but I think I'll give you the very, very honest answer. It's not going to be what you expect. I think initially my self-belief was misplaced because I think it came from arrogance. I think, you work for some big brands like Deloitte or Investec, and no, you know, I'm not bad mouthing them. This is my own personal, this is my own personal shortcomings. And you make a lot of money and you have expensive cars and you have nice suits and, you have nice Montblanc pen. And there's a certain amount of, I think in my earlier years, certain amount of arrogance, because you know, I had talent, I was good at what I did. And I think the best gift I was ever given in this journey was to put that arrogance to the test. And I realized, like, I always thought I was a brilliant salesman, but it's easy to sell when you're selling as Deloitte. You know, because people want to naturally gravitate towards buying from Deloitte. But be Mr. I don't have a big brand name with me and I want to sell you cyber defense. And you realize how difficult it is. And you also realize that you're not as good as of a salesperson as you thought you were. And you've got a lot to learn. The other thing it taught me is I very quickly lost all of that. I lost, you know, the nice suits. I lost a lot of things. And I went through this phase where it became really difficult because I didn't have all of those things. And then I started the realization that I'm not the things I own, you know? But it also allowed me or taught me that, you know, so I would drive up to the client and I had a 1400, you know, Bantam Bucky that I'd drive up that I'd be selling you cybersecurity. And I would remember a lot of people, even though I owned my own business, they didn't know this and that we were making a considerable amount of money and I was a CEO. I'd jump out of the Bucky and I'd walk up the stairs and I'd see the people look at me and sort of judge me. But, you know, those weren't the important metrics, you know, driving a nice car and all, because now I started to realize what, you know, what I valued and that it wasn't the things that I owned. But it also taught me that now when I'm standing on those staircases and, you know, somebody pulls up with a 1400 Bucky and the youngster jumps out and he's there and he's all excited, I see him as the next Porsche driver. The other thing is, and it hurts us, and I've had it. So if I say this and it resonates with you, don't feel bad. But the world doesn't owe you anything. So I was speaking to the CEO of Lonman. The CEO Lonman was giving a talk, and he was talking and he was telling us a little bit about Lonman and the challenges at Lonman at the time. And he was also telling us about how he always, when he was a kid, he wanted to be a bus driver. And so even though he's the CEO of Lonman, he was still going to see that dream through of being a bus driver. But one interesting thing he said, you know, you guys come to me and you guys like, you know, I'm a young African startup. You know, I've got the right credentials, if you know, and I'm coming from the right kind of place. You must buy from me. And he said, no. What value are you adding to my world? Why must I buy from you? Just because you're a young South African and you're an entrepreneur and you're building an African business, I owe you something? It's like, no, you come add value to my world and I will repay that value, you know? But just because you're young, you're African, and you're building this business, doesn't mean the world owes you anything, right? And I think we need to get that, like, we really need to understand that the world doesn't owe us anything. Because even I used to walk around thinking that the world owes me something. And nobody does. It's value for value. You've got to create value if you want to get value. And that doesn't matter who you are.
Very powerful. Very powerful. And I think that's a resonating theme across, you know, the continent and in the country and somehow even inbuilt in some of the work that as entrepreneurship supporters we do. When you say it hurt, how did you react to that? Because someone, you know, can because there's so many opportunity. I mean, there's so many handouts going out, and some people can continue trying to go for those handouts. But for you, change your opportunity, change your worldview, and it hurt. Like, what part of it made it hurt, and why did you turn that hurt into a great success?
Really good question, right? So I think the first time it hurt is you want to blame everybody else but yourself. So you want to blame the corruption within the system, and you wanna blame, big business picking on the little business. So I'll give you a perfect example. I built a piece of technology, and I took it to a telecommunications firm, and they saw the technology, and ultimately it was a great idea. I didn't lock my IP in the way I should have. Number one, and number two is, I went in there asking for 50% of the business. And, I'm speaking, we're two guys that's working out of his mother's house at that particular point in time, and we built this piece of tech. And the CEO decided, no, well, I paid 30 developers. Why can't my 30 developers that I pay build the same tech? Why can't I keep 100%? And I was so angry with him. I was like, that's so unethical. That's just business. Why even give away 50% of your business when you invest in 30 developers and you see two developers and you say, well, if two guys could have done that, I have 30. Surely my 30 should be able to at least develop the same kind of, and I should take it in, and I should be able to take it out there. And if it's not a protected idea, what am I really doing wrong other than looking out for my own interest? And I realized, some people would still debate whether that's ethical or unethical. That's not the important point. The important point was, instead of looking at all the things I did wrong, I was so ready to criticize this thing. And the same thing with the DTI. Like, why is the DTI not helping me build my business? Oh, it's because of corruption. Oh, it's because of we're so ready to focus on the negative side. Number one is, let me tell you, I speak to people every day, and I work with like all the government departments, Department of Telecommunications. These things are being weeded out. And then it's not like we're unaware of these issues. Are things getting better? Yes, I believe they're getting better. But maybe that's my, sort of sunny disposition. That's my optimism for us in South Africa. But also, I'm not using that as a crutch to say why I can't achieve things on my end. So, the DTI, we didn't build my business with the DTI, for example. But I didn't expect the DTI to help me build my business. But, a few years later, I'm sitting on a DTI's platform, and they're giving me an award for my achievements. It's a little bit, I know it's a little bit cliche, but, not what the DTI can do for me, but ask, what can I do for the DTI? Like, how can I make this country better? How can I work with the DTI and inspire young entrepreneurs?
Thank you so much for your story. Many insights for myself here, and I'm sure it's going to be very beneficial for those that want to have an entrepreneurial mind. Thank you very much.
Stay inspired and be entrepreneurial. Follow us on social media and find us on WhatsApp. Namgiyakhona. If it is going to be, it is up to me.